2 weeks ago, we began a study on the person of Moses. Sometimes we can forget that God deals with people. These were not superhumans. You know, we think of Superman or Spider-Man who can do and leap from building to building, and Batman, he's able to do all these different things. And you know, and we tend to think of superheroes when we think of Bible characters. But we're told in the book of James that these men, such as Elijah, was men of like passions, just as you and I are. And so it's important for us to learn from these Bible characters, particularly tonight as we are looking at Moses. 2 weeks ago, we saw the early training of Moses. We saw the society in which he was born. It was in Egypt. We saw the home in which he was born. Exodus chapter 6, verse 20, it was Amram and Jochebed who were the parents of Moses. And we saw their faith, according to Hebrews chapter 11. Last week, we went to the choice of Moses. Moses made a choice. He had been trained by his mom. He was trained by the Egyptians. In Acts, we're told there that he was learned in all the wisdom of Egypt. And so we saw that he made a choice. And that choice was he refused to be identified with being called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He not only refused that, but he made a choice to follow God's people. Why? Because he esteemed the riches of God to be greater than the riches of Egypt. Following sin that only lasts for a season. In other words, we saw last week that he considered the life with God at its worst to be superior to the life of the world at its best. And when you have come to the place where you see that Christianity at its worst, and it has its pitfalls, right? Sometimes there's suffering, sometimes there's persecution. But at its worst, it is so superior to what all the world has to offer at its best. Tonight, I want us to go to the advanced training of Moses. The advanced training of Moses. And we're going to show you what I mean by that. If you look over to Acts chapter 7, and here's Stephen speaking of Moses, says that when he was full 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. We saw that this was when he made the choice to refuse the riches of Egypt, to accept the afflictions of God's people. And it came to his heart, verse 23, to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. For he, verse 25, supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not. And the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove, and would have set them at one again, saying, Sirs, ye are brethren, why do ye wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, Who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Wilt thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday? Then fled Moses at this saying, and what was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat two sons. And when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai an angel of the Lord in a flame of fire in a bush. I guess we could kind of say that the education of Moses when he was small was his elementary school. Then when he left his parents, he went to live in Egypt as the son of Moses, of Pharaoh's daughter. We could say that was his college degree. And as we saw, look at verse 22, he was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and in deeds. I want to suggest to you that he goes to grad school. And he is going to take a high, upper level education. The first thing I want you to see here tonight is the time of this advanced training. The time of this advanced training. Now, many of you may already know this, but I want you to see it if you didn't know this. Because we're told when he was learned in awe, verse 22, the wisdom of the Egyptians was mighty in words and deeds. He got his college degree. How old was he? He graduates at age 40. Now think about that. So for the first 40 years, now raise your hand if you're at least 40. Okay, so if you're at least 40 years of age, what was life like for you for the first 40 years? If you were to write a journal or a biography, what would be in that biography? Well, in the case of Moses, we've seen what's in his biography. But we're told that at the age of 40 is when he had this little conflict with the Egyptians, right? So he had an Egyptian fight against an Israelite. What did he do to the Egyptian? Killed him. Now, why did he do that? Well, it tells us in the book of Exodus, he looked this way and looked that way. And he, as it tells us here, verse 25, supposed that he would be the deliverer. Because according to the book of Genesis, chapter 15, in the fourth generation, or 400 years in that fourth generation, there is going to be a deliverer that's going to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. This was known in the book of Genesis. And it's interesting that at the age of 40, he thought, you know, hey, I've got my education under my belt. I made a good choice. I chose the people of God in their afflictions over the wealth of Egypt. Is that a good thing? Yes. But the Bible tells us that that didn't end well. Why? That's the kind of thing we want to explore tonight. Now, we're going to find that in verse 29, after that didn't end well, he did what? He fled and went to Midian. Went out to the desert. And it tells us here he had two sons. How long did that last? See, it's in verse 30. And when 40, look at the verse. It's right there in your Bible. When 40 years was expired, this is when God meets Moses at the burning bush. So, now, we could say, okay, so that means that Moses didn't even begin the Exodus until he was out of the prime of his life. And how old was he when he died? Yes, Deuteronomy 34:7 tells us that he died at the age of 120. So, that means we can divide the life of Moses into three 40s. The first 40 years, he got his college degree. The second 40 years, he gets his graduate degree. And the third 40 years, he actually is going to finally do his work that God wanted him to do all along. So, what does that mean? That means that there was a time of preparation of 80 years in the life of this man. So if you are at least 40 years old, that'd be like saying, okay, the next 40 years, now I'm really going to have it rough. And then at the end of that 40 years, then God is going to do a work through me. Now, obviously, God doesn't work on the same timetable with everybody. And it could be argued to live 120 years old, that's a little bit longer than the normal age span today. So they may have lived a little bit longer. We know that in the case of Abraham, he lived 175 years. We know in the case of Methuselah, he lived over 900 years. But by the time of Moses, two-thirds of his life was in training. So that means we need to try to understand a little bit those events. Now, only one chapter in the book of Exodus, and let's go over there, Exodus chapter 2. And in Exodus chapter 2, we see in verse 15, and this is picking up where we left off in Acts, the story there. In verse 15, and when Pharaoh heard that he had killed the Egyptian, verse 15, he sought to do what? Okay, you there? Exodus chapter 2, verse 15. He sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, which we saw in Acts, and he sat down by a well. And just for the sake of not having to come back to this later, if I don't have time, verse 14, why did he flee? Because at the end of verse 15, Moses feared. He feared Pharaoh. Now, it's interesting that, so now he's in the land of Midian. He's sitting next to a well. Verse 16, the priest of Midian had seven daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. So you had these bullies who were trying to chase away these daughters so they could get all the water, I suppose. But Moses stood up and helped them. Watered their flock. And when they came to Reuel, now Reuel is the same as you'll see in chapter 3, verse 1, is Jethro. This is his father-in-law. And it tells us here that he said, how is it that ye are come so soon today? In verse 19, they said, these seven daughters, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. And he said unto his daughters, and where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. So, it doesn't tell us that they did that, but we see the result of it. They went and got Moses, verse 21. And notice these words, and Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he dwelt there. How long did he dwell there? 40 years. We know that according to Acts. He was content to dwell there. And while during that 40 years, he was given to Zipporah, his daughter, and she bare him a son. And he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. We're told in chapter 18, verse 10, 11, that he had another son, 18 verse 4. So we're told that he has these two sons. Now, Think about it. You know, here is Moses in a situation where he actually had an advanced knowledge of science, advanced knowledge of literature. He had an advanced knowledge of military tactics. Now he's stuck on the backside of a desert. Now, here he is there. So, this is the event explained. Now, I want to then go thirdly to the lessons learned. And I want to borrow some brains here tonight. I've been reading a book called God Prepares His Man Moses, a 4-volume set on the life of Moses. And instead of, with the short time we have, trying to develop all this, let me just go ahead and read you what Theodore Epp. Theodore Epp is from Back to the Bible. I don't know if you've ever heard Back to the Bible broadcast. But this is what he wrote. And this was what Moses was learning in the backside of the desert. Moses had to learn what it was to be dead to self and truly alive to God. Now Jesus, he says, stated this principle in these words. Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone, but if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Isn't that right? You take a seed and put it in the ground, it starts to deteriorate and it dies and it brings life. Now Jesus said, except you die, you are not going to be able to produce fruit. The great secret, Epp says, of Moses' life of usefulness had not yet been realized. The experience of death to self and the new resurrected life was yet to be his. He eventually learned this lesson, but it took him 40 years to learn this lesson. The killing of the Egyptian was far from an act of faith. Rather, it sprang from an uncontrolled, selfish zeal. He had, in faith, chosen the people of God over the pleasures of Egypt, but he tried to do that in the flesh. He wanted to do what God wanted him to do, but he wanted to emancipate the people, but he took it upon himself to perform this task instead of inquiring about and waiting on God's orders and God's methods. Moses still had to learn the spiritual ends are never achieved by carnal means, and that the emancipation of God's people had to be completely God's undertaking. Moses was to be the instrument, but the deliverance itself had to be God's work entirely. Also, Moses' intervention at this time was premature. We talked about that last week. God's people were not yet ready, and God had said that they would be in Egypt for 400 years, Genesis 15:13. And although Moses was of the promised fourth generation, the 400 years were not yet up. Since Moses had several important lessons yet to learn, God took him alone to the desert where he could train him. Moses still had plenty of courses to master in God's private school, for he was much too strong for God to use. Now think about that statement. How is it possible to be so strong God can't use you? Epp goes on, says, can people be too strong for God? Yes, especially when their strength originates with self rather than with God. Moses had yet to learn that true strength could result only when he recognized his own weaknesses. Isn't this what Paul said? This is what Epp points to right now. He says the Apostle Paul had to learn this lesson. Paul had a thorn in the flesh. He had asked God 3 different times to remove it from him. But God did not choose to do so. As a result, Paul learned a valuable lesson, which he recorded in 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, which says that God said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, my strength is made perfect in... Most gladly, therefore, Paul says, will I rather glory in mine infirmities, that the power of Christ might rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. Why? For when I am, then am I seen. So, coming back to that question, is it possible to be too strong to be used of God? Some of you are very talented people. You've been in the Bible a long time. You have been given gifts of God to be used of the Lord. But the big danger is you can start depending on that, like Moses did. And Moses had a specific task that God wanted him to do. And so God had to make him weak. You see, someone wrote that, they're attributing this to Moody, that said Moses spent his first 40 years thinking he was a somebody. He spent his second 40 years learning that he was a nobody. Instead of being the leader of everything in Egypt, he's in the backside of a desert, raising a family, dealing with sheep. Now, I want you to go over to the book of Hebrews, okay? And don't lose your hand in Exodus, because we'll come back. But in Hebrews chapter 11, I want you to see this is God's way of dealing with people of faith. In Hebrews chapter 11, and for the sake of time, we won't read all of them, but he mentions Gideon and Barak and Samuel and Jephthah and David and Samuel. But he says these heroes of the faith, and we talk about superheroes. These are heroes of the faith. Notice a characteristic about them, verse 34. They were quenched. They quenched the violence of fire. They escaped the edge of the sword. And notice this little expression. Can we read it together? Out of weakness were made strong. Out of weakness, they were strong in the faith. Now, I want you to see this. In chapter 11, verse 27. Now it tells us here about Moses. By faith he did what? Forsook Egypt, and notice this, not fearing the wrath of the king. Wait a minute. He fled Egypt afraid of the king. Remember that? How many remember that? Okay. Now, coming back to Exodus chapter 2, we're told in verse 14, Moses feared when he found out that his murder had been revealed. In verse 15, Pharaoh sought to kill him, and Moses fled. Now, stay with me for a moment. He was afraid. He's not afraid. When was he not afraid? When he went back to Egypt and when he delivered the children of Israel out of Egypt, he did that not fearing Pharaoh. 40 years earlier, he was afraid. So my point is this. Something happened to Moses in that 40 years on the backside of the desert. Now, it's interesting, and I want you to listen to this, and I'm just going to read a little bit more of that here. During that 40 years, and this is what Theodore Epp says, and I don't know where he got this, but it wouldn't be surprising. Some think that Moses wrote the book of Genesis during those 40 years. He said there's no way of knowing for sure, but we do know as we study Moses' life that an important gradual change took place in his life during those 40 years. He came to rely on the power of God, not on the power of his smarts, not on the power of his strength, not in the abilities of his upbringing, but on the power of God. That's what happened during those 40 years. And he says, he came to rely on the power of God rather than on himself or on armies or any human resources. He learned to see the wisdom of God as superior to anything he had witnessed at all in all of Egypt. By the time God gave Moses his personal call at the burning bush, Moses was so deeply convinced of his nothingness that he gave excuse after excuse concerning why he wasn't qualified. So, coming back to Moody's quote, he spent his first 40 years thinking he was somebody. He spent his next 40 years learning he was a nobody. And he spent his last 40 years discovering what God can do with a nobody. Now, by the time God gave Moses his personal call at the burning bush, Moses was so deeply convinced of his nothingness that this is when he gave his excuses. But by then, he was exactly as God wanted him. This really marked the third crisis of his life as he finally came to the place of settling the issue once and for all. It had to be none of self and all of God. Now, how does that fit into what's going on in our lives? And there's much we could be saying about that, but let me just at least read to you. I got online to a sermon by a fellow named John Hamby. I don't know him. But what he says here is very interesting. He said, Moses entered into the second aspect of his schooling, and perhaps you have some of those courses where you're on the back side of the desert. He said, some people spend a few weeks in the wilderness. Others spend months. And I could add, others spend years. Moses walked this barren land for 40 years. And what's very interesting is he spent time there getting to know God. And if you look at chapter 3, verse 1 of Exodus, Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest. And it talks about on the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of what? And we should not be too surprised if during those 40 years he spent a lot of time out there, kind of like David as the shepherd, talking to God. And it's Mount Sinai. But this is the mountain where he met God. And he spent time with God. Hamby says, your wilderness experience in your life may involve caring for an ailing family member over an extended time. It may include your dry and desert time in physical condition that doesn't improve. It could come in the form of an absent spouse. It could come in the form of a rebellious child. It could be a thankless job. It could be an endless routine that doesn't seem to be able to be breaking out of it. And we could add a lot of things to that, couldn't we? It could be barrenness. It could be lack of results in what I'm seeing God doing in my life. It could be, why doesn't God heal this person? Why is it that I'm going day in and day out in this monotony? 1 year goes by, 2 years goes by. 1 decade goes by, 2 decades go by, 3 decades go by, 4 decades go by for Moses. So that he could finally come to the place where he could meet the challenge. Why? Because he's going to spend the next 40 years doing what? In a wilderness. And he's going to spend all that time dealing with complaining people. And he's going to deal with people who are not going to appreciate him. And if God had called him to go and deliver the children of Israel 40 years earlier, he would have been totally acting in his own self-efforts. Now, I told you that this is a bigger, I prayed this, this is a bigger subject than I had time to deal with. When I was in college, John Vaughn preached a series of messages called Brokenness. I found out later that he got those messages from Charles Stanley, who I listened to sometime, on brokenness. And basically, God, in order to use you, now, he may not produce all kinds of results in your life, but you have to come to the conclusion in your life, God is more than enough. And if God breaks us, let's not get bitter over it. Let's not get angry over it. Let's understand that whatever God does is good. And it could be in your marriage, it could be in your home, it could be in your health, it could be in your life. And we have got to say, you know what, God? You are more than enough. And if you feel a need to break me, so that I, in my weakness, will make you strong. May we be like Paul that says, I rejoice in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may abide on us. What a lesson from Moses. What a lesson from Moses. Our Lord, we ask that you would use us. Help us, Father, in all that we need to do. Lord, you have called us to this ministry in our lives that brings us to a point where sometimes we don't think it makes sense. But Lord, you know that our sin nature gets in the way. We're so proud. We think higher of ourselves than we ought to think. Lord, help us to trust you. When you bring us to the end of ourselves, then it's in those times that we're most usable for your glory. And we'll praise you for it in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you. Thank you for coming tonight.